Macmillan Audio presents Love in a Nutshell by Janet Ivanovich and Dorian Kelly. Read for you by Lorelei King.
Chapter 1. Kate Appleton needed a job, again. Actually, need didn't come close to describing the hunger and sharp bite of desperation speeding her steps across Depot Brewing Company's parking lot on that crisp October afternoon. Just as the town marina to the right of the microbrewery was growing empty of boats, Keene's Harbor, Michigan was growing empty of tourists and their cash. And at this moment, Kate needed cash. She had moved to Keene's Harbor a couple of weeks ago, eager to change her parents' dilapidated lake house into a thriving bed and breakfast. They had moved to Naples, Florida, and the harsh reality was that it hadn't been used in years, except as a nut storage facility by a family of industrious squirrels. Ironic, since a homemade plaque proclaiming the house the Nutshell had adorned the front entrance since before she could remember. In any event, the house needed a lot of work, and her parents were less than enthusiastic about pumping tens of thousands of dollars into a home that was already underwater on its mortgage. To make matters worse, they'd gotten a letter from some lawyer last week that the bank had gone into bankruptcy and the mortgage had been sold to some private investor. He'd offered to release Kate's parents from the debt in exchange for the property. It was actually a fairly generous offer, considering the market. But Kate was trying to build a life for herself in Keene's Harbor. And damn it, her family home wasn't for sale. Depot Brewing wasn't just Kate's last shot at employment. It was the last shot at her dreams. Crimson maple leaves crunched beneath her leather boots as she marched toward the handsome yellow brick and sandstone building and checked off her plan of action. She would be firm, yet polite, honest, yet not to the point of oversharing. And she would go straight to the top, to the guy who could make her or... forget that. She wouldn't consider the possibility of someone breaking her. And she wouldn't consider walking away without a job. Kate drew in a breath, pulled back her shoulders, and wrapped her hand around the hammered bronze door handle of her new workplace. Matt Culhane sat holed up in his small and admittedly cluttered office behind Deeper Brewing Company's tap room. He wanted one last look at his inventory spreadsheet before the after-work crowd showed up. Not that he begrudged his customers their fun, but he should have chosen to stay put in his dungeon of an office in the back of the microbrewery rather than move into the portion of the building housing the newly constructed but noisy restaurant. He was deciding whether to work out a trade with one of his brewer buddies for some Chinese hops when he heard Jerry, his hospitality manager, greet someone in the tap room. "Is Matt Culhane in?" a woman asked Jerry. "I need to talk to him. His office is in the back, right?"
"Yes," Jerry replied. "But wait, you can't..."
"Thanks so much for your help," the woman replied. "I can find my way." Kate knocked once on the open door and swept into the office, closing the door behind her and leaving Jerry standing on the other side, open-mouthed and clearly flustered. Culhane's first thought was that she was a woman on a mission. His second thought was that he was intrigued. She was just over 5 feet tall and had short-cropped blonde hair, big hazel eyes, and a wide mouth that he suspected would light up a room when she smiled. Matt rose, rounded his desk, and extended his hand.
"Hi, I'm Matt Culhane."
Kate took his hand and gave it a firm, businesslike shake. "I know. I'm Kate Appleton. I don't have a job, and it's your fault. 20 minutes ago, I was fired because of you."
"Because of me?"
"Yep, from Bagger's Tavern down on Keene Avenue. It was all because of your skunky beer." Before he could respond, she planted herself in the one guest chair that didn't have files stacked on it. Cute, but crazy, Matt thought, following her lead and returning to sit in his chair behind his desk. And oddly enough, it did nothing to diminish his attraction to her.
"Harley fired you?"
He did, Kate said.
Did he say why?
Apparently, I'm no longer to be trusted behind the bar because bad beer passed from tap to lips. I don't think that's fair. And when I look at the whole mess, I figure it's your responsibility. It was your beer, she replied in a patient tone. I moved to Keene's Harbor 3 weeks ago and lobbied like crazy to get even that part-time bartending job. Then I lost it over bad beer. Now I have nothing. Every store downtown is owned locally, and every owner runs their place alone in the slow season. Matt smiled.
That's to be expected. A town built to hold several thousand summer visitors can be pretty empty come the cool weather. Why'd you move here in the off-season?
Well, let's just say my options were extremely limited. I needed an inexpensive place to stay, and the mortgage payments on my parents' lake house are a heck of a lot less than any decent rental. Actually, she was a few months behind on the payments. Between her crapola job at Bagger's and the endless repairs on the house, her savings were pretty much gone. She talked to the bank, and they'd agreed to let her catch up over the next 6 months, but that was before they'd gone belly up. Kate drove the thought from her mind, replacing it with the happy memories that had inspired her to move to Keene's Harbor in the first place. I'd spent summers here as a kid and loved it. I thought I could come up with some sort of job. Apparently, she had some history around town, and she also looked to be in the general ballpark of his age. Still, it was no surprise their paths hadn't crossed earlier. He'd stuck with his townie pack. In his high school days, the summer girls weren't worth the snobbishness some of them had thrown at the locals while sunning on Lake Michigan's long stretch of beach.
"So you're a summer person," he said.
He wasn't into line drawing anymore, but he couldn't resist teasing just a little, trying to provoke the same little flush of emotion to her cheeks he'd seen when she first walked into his office. "Thanks, but I think of myself more as a citizen of all seasons."
"Works for me. Where's your parents' place?"
"It's on the lake, about 2 miles north of town. It's old, big, and drafty, and it's a huge money pit." Which brings us back to the aforementioned skunky beer, she said, obviously trying to drive the conversation to a set destination. Matt was curious enough to give her the room to run.
"I'll agree that Harley serves my beer, but I'm not going any further than that. The keg could have been bad for a lot of reasons, including dirty tap lines, bad tapping, or the fact that it was past its expiration date. But the bottom line is that I didn't tell him to fire you."
"Just the same, honor compels that you give me a job." Another surprise bombshell.
"A job?"
"Yes, and I'm available to start immediately."
Lucky me, he thought.
The woman was clearly crazy, and yet strangely appealing in her overly earnest, convoluted reasoning.
"Supposing, for the sake of discussion, that we were hiring right now," he said. "Other than a couple of weeks at Bagger's, what's your work experience?"
She folded her hands in her lap, a gesture more appropriate for a navy blue interview suit than jeans and a puffy off-white down jacket still zipped up to her chin. He wondered what she was going to wear when it really got cold around here. "I have a BA in drama from a small college in Ohio." This time he couldn't fight back a smile.
"I didn't ask about your education. I asked what you can do. Before you came to Keene's Harbor, did you have a job?"
"Yes." He waited for more, but it didn't appear to be coming.
"And?"
he asked. "I was an assistant editor at a business magazine headquartered downstate outside of Detroit."
"And?"
he prompted again. "I moved here."
"As you said, with very little in the way of options. What happened to the job?"
"The skills aren't relevant to what you do here, but if you really need to know, I was let go."
"Why?"
"It wasn't directly performance-related, so again, I don't think it's all that relevant." He was hooked. He had to know. He was sure it was something worth hearing.
"Spill it," he said. "Lay it on me."
Kate bit her lower lip. "I had a little incident changing the black ink cartridge for the printer I shared with a couple other people. Maybe it was because we'd switched to a generic brand, or maybe it was because someone, perhaps with the name of Melvin, had messed with it. But whatever the case, I got ink all over the front of my dress. And then, while I was in the bathroom trying to soak what I could from the dress, the fire alarm went off."
"Sounds like something you'd see on Cinemax after midnight."
Let's just say that when presented the choice between potential death and a bit of semi-nudity smack in the middle of downtown Royal Oak, I let the skin show.
You didn't have much of an option.
She raised her right shoulder in a half shrug. True. As it turned out, someone, perhaps with the name of Melvin, had pulled the fire alarm. There was no fire, but between the scene on the street and the fact that the video from the building's security camera somehow hit the internet and went viral, my boss let me go. He said I had become a liability to the magazine. No one could take me seriously, and so someone with the name of Melvin got my job.
That stinks, Matt said.
Kate nodded in agreement. It did, but I learned a few good lessons, including always use brand name ink and watch out for guys named Melvin. Matt laughed. Kate Appleton might be an involuntary exhibitionist, but so far she'd shown herself to be smart and quick with an answer, and she wore her emotions on her face. His gut told him she was possibly a little nutty, but beyond that, a decent person, and Matt generally went with his instincts. Now, about that job, she asked. He leaned forward, elbows on desk.
I'll start by saying that the bad beer at Bagger's was a problem on his end of the system. Granted, there's a remote possibility it happened here, but that part of the process is under tight control, so I'm not talking to you to redeem my honor or anything like that.
She nodded. Okay, so long as the talk involves a job, I'm listening. Kate Appleton did not appear to be a believer in the theory of leverage, in that he had it and she did not. Still, she was bold. He appreciated that about her, and at the moment, she might just be exactly what he needed.
There have been some incidents over the past few months, Matt said, lowering his voice. They didn't start out as anything big or all that awful. In fact, for a while there, I just kind of put it down to a streak of bad luck.
What kind of bad luck? He leaned back in his chair and considered when it all started.
Well, call it ego, but I'd like to think that last spring my first failed batch of beer in years was more than just a slip-up on my part. Since then, it's been small stuff. Misrouted deliveries, flat tires on the delivery trucks, that kind of thing.
All of which, pardon me for saying this, could be put down to employee screw-ups. Matt nodded.
I know, but they're happening more and more often. I really think one of my employees is trying to sabotage my business.
Kate leaned forward in her seat. What makes you think it's an employee?
Access. Whoever is behind it knows my schedule and my business, and most of the incidents have occurred in employee-only areas where a customer would be immediately noticed.
Kate raised her eyebrows. So you want me to help find some deranged lunatic with a beer vendetta?
I'd hire a private investigator, but this time of year, it would be nearly impossible for a stranger to go unnoticed for more than a day. You, on the other hand, are not a total outsider. And between the impressive performance you just gave convincing me to hire you and your degree in drama, I'm guessing you can act a part if you have to. That makes you a great candidate for the job I have in mind.
She tilted her head. And that would be what?
I'd be hiring you to be a floater. If someone is out sick or there's a crunch in a certain area of the operation, you'd be the one to step in.
Even though it's likely that 80% of the time I won't know what the heck I'm doing?
I get the sense you're a quick study.
Absolutely. Definitely. I'm your girl, and since I'm so smart, I get the sense that I'll be more than a floater.
Your job will be to tell me what's going on around here. What am I missing? What don't people want to say to my face? Who have you seen that shouldn't be here?
You want me to be a snitch?
How about a secret agent?
She sat silent a moment, trying on the phrase for fit. I like it. I'm Appleton, Kate Appleton, licensed to snoop.
Good. You'll be my eyes and ears. If someone in Keene's Harbor has a grudge against me, you'll let me know.
Sounds doable. From what I heard behind the bar at Bagger's, folks around here still do love to talk.
Well, don't take the buzz too literally. The colder the weather gets, the bigger the stories around here grow. Town is pretty quiet after Labor Day, and we need something to keep life interesting.
Fair enough. How much are you offering for the position?
Minimum wage, he replied.
I'm sorry, but don't think so. I'm desperate, but not short-sighted. Sooner or later, someone is going to figure out that I'm bringing gossip back to you, and at that point, I'm not going to be worth anything.
Matt grinned. So what do you suggest?
How about minimum wage and a $20,000 bonus if I'm directly responsible for finding your saboteur?
You're kidding.
Nope. Matt considered his options, and they were limited. He couldn't hire a full-fledged townie any more than he could a PI. If word got out that some crazy was targeting Depot Brewery, it could scare away a lot of customers. Kate smiled. Hey, it's no more than you'd pay to a PI, and I only get paid if I actually solve the mystery. And it could end up costing you a lot more to just ignore the thing and hope it goes away. Matt paused to consider her argument. The truth was, the accidents were starting to add up, and it already cost him more than $20,000.
Okay, deal.
Kate beamed. I promise I'll be the best secret spy you've ever hired. At 8:45 on Friday morning, Kate parked at the far end of Depot Brewing Company's lot. She exited her ancient, beloved, green and slightly rust-spotted Jeep and pocketed her keys. Since she had the luxury of a handful of minutes, and Mother Nature had granted Keene's Harbor yet another blissfully sunny day, she checked out in more detail her new place of employment. If Kate could whistle, which sadly she couldn't, this place would merit a nice long and low one. Small wonder the tourists flocked here like it was Nirvana. An outdoor patio, now closed for the season, was surrounded by evergreens that must have cost Matt Culhane a fortune to have transplanted onto this sandy spit of land. She could picture the patio full of people, laughter, and music in the summertime. And she could picture Culhane here, too. As the microbrewery's name implied, this had once been Keene's Harbor's railroad depot. Kate's dad, who was a history buff, had told her that this town had been built on the lumber trade. In a few decades, though, most of the area was logged out. A few decades after that, the rail spur to the harbor was abandoned. All that had been left was a wreck of a building that Kate recalled as a prime spot for the underage summer kids to drink a few super sweet wine coolers. Since she hadn't been alone at this party spot, she'd bet she wasn't the only one who got a kick out of Matt Culhane turning it into a microbrewery. He'd obviously added on to the small depot, but whoever had come up with the design had made sure that the original architecture still shone through. Kate was unsure whether it was okay to go through the employees-only door near where she'd parked, since there was a huge semi backed up to an open garage-type door next to it. She opted for the public entry. Now that she wasn't wrapped in a haze of determination and desperation, she noted the mosaic in front of the entrance. Set into the concrete was a Depot Brewing logo, a steam locomotive surrounded by a bunch of whimsical items, including what looked to be a happy three-legged dog. Kate stepped over the image, feeling that the dog had suffered enough without being trod upon. "You're a pretty cool dude, three legs or not."
"His name is Chuck, and he's my dog,"
Culhane said, suddenly standing in the open doorway.
"Well, the real one is. That one's Tile, so I don't think he'll be answering you."
She couldn't work up a single word in reply. The man was flat-out gorgeous. A muscled, dark-haired, blue-eyed, one dimple that he could apparently produce at will kind of gorgeous. She'd noted this yesterday, too, but anxiety had kept her on her game. If she'd babbled in the face of male hotness, she would have walked away empty-handed. Today, she had a job, and her words were fleeting.
I like dogs, she finally managed.
She thought of her former dog, Stella, and felt a little lump forming in her chest.
Good. And I like dog people. Why don't you come on in?
Kate did, trying hard to cut back on the staring. She was sure he was wearing the same slightly faded chambray button-down shirt and pair of well-fit jeans as yesterday afternoon. New to his features was a shadow of a beard. His dark brown hair looked either tousled with sleep or the lack thereof. "You're seriously tall," she said. He laughed.
"To you, maybe."
"Pull it together, Appleton," she thought. "Get a grip." "Point taken," she said. From the vantage point of just over 5 feet, pretty much every guy's a giant. "You look tired, too."
Matt ruffled a hand through his hair.
We pulled an all-nighter.
An all-nighter doing what? She asked, immediately wishing she hadn't, because the answer might be personal. Her long, dormant libido stirred at the possibilities.
Come this way and I'll show you, he said. It's not all that exciting.
Cross orgy off the list.
We just got into bottled beer in addition to kegs and growlers, so we don't have a regular bottling line yet, he said. That means we have to rent a portable line every couple of months until I think sales justify the expense of a permanent one. It will take another addition or a move of the whole facility to do it, so for now, we make do. And we also do it after hours so that our regular business can cruise on.
Matt ushered her past his office, through a set of glass doors, to a room with enormous stainless steel tanks, and then through another door into a brightly lit storage room with a truck well. The kind of industrial orange temporary lighting she'd seen sold in building warehouse stores shone up the ramp and into the back of the semi.
A bottling line on wheels, Matt said.
Very cool, she said, thankful to have something other than Matt to focus on while she regained her business manners. That done, she turned her attention to the people busy checking her out. About 20 exhausted-looking souls sat at tables someone must have dragged in from the tap room.
Everyone, this is Kate, Matt announced. Kate? Everyone.
Hey, Kate, a few of them said. Most just raised a glass of beer in a weary greeting. Kate fought hard not to gag at the thought of beer as a breakfast staple. She liked the idea of herself as a yogurt and fruit girl, but the reality was she was more the cold pizza type, especially when she was PMSing.
Kate's coming to work with us as a floater, Matt said to the assembled crew.
That brought on a little more enthusiasm. Good, a new victim, a midnight black-haired young woman said. Kate thought the employee looked too young to work with beer, except for the tattoo of a bare-chested cowboy riding a neon-colored dragon wrapping its way from her wrist up her arm. Either she'd forged her mother's signature for that beauty, or she was at least 18. "Does this mean that Hobart and I are breaking up?" the young woman asked Matt.
"For this weekend, at least."
She squealed, then ran and hugged her boss.
"It's up to Jerry if Kate stays there, Amber,"
Matt said, gently unwinding her and taking a step back.
"But you worked hard last night, and I know you're sick of Hobart."
Who the heck is Hobart? Kate thought, scanning the crew for a guy who looked remotely like he might have the misfortune to be named Hobart. Matt turned to Kate.
Let's go to my office. We might as well get the paperwork out of the way. Then you can report to Jerry.
So he'll be my direct supervisor? She asked as Matt ushered her back the way they'd come. He nodded.
He manages food services, which will include you for the time being. He's a guy you met out front during our unscheduled job interview yesterday afternoon.
Oops, I sort of bulldozed right past him. I probably didn't make the best first impression.
Jerry can be pretty forgiving, and you'll like the rest of the crew, too. About half of the people you saw back in the storage room work for me, and the rest are temps who come in for the bottling. We finished up over 200 cases just a little while ago. Most of the other employees, except the summer staff, you'll meet today.
Matt opened his office door.
Come on in. It shouldn't take long to get this squared away. Then we'll get you a uniform.
Kate glanced around, taking in the framed photos on the cubicle-style walls, which didn't quite make it all the way to the ceiling.
My family, mostly, Matt said.
He waved one hand toward another shot of a pack of helmeted and uniformed men bearing sticks.
And my hockey team.
She smiled. That I'd figured out. Kate pulled her driver's license and social security card from her wallet and handed them to Matt. You need these, right? He settled in behind his desk. From its front, she guessed it was a vintage oak piece that had been left to molder in the closed-down depot. Its top looked as though a file cabinet had disgorged itself onto it. Working in a measure of chaos definitely didn't throw this guy. Kate sat and watched as Matt studied her license. Turn it over, she said, knowing exactly what he was thinking. I'm divorced. My name is changed back to Appleton on the back. He glanced up at her.
Divorced? Sorry.
Don't be, she said. It was for the best. except for that messy little glitch whereby both she and the ex, Richard, had lost their savings. The McMansion he'd so desperately wanted had turned out to be worth less than a soggy chicken patty when they'd gone to sell it. Even tougher on Kate had been handing over their poodle, Stella, to the ex, because he'd ended up in a place more suitable for dog ownership, and the court had awarded him guardianship. Kate had fought hard to keep Stella, but the truth was, Richard had a more expensive lawyer, and she lost. She couldn't bear to think of Stella too much these days. Matt pulled a form from one of the stacks of folders covering his desk.
Yeah, well, from what I've heard from friends, it had to be a pain to go through.
Well, it's survivable, but let's just say I'm convinced that if you look in the mirror and say Richard Slate 3 times, he'll magically appear and kill you with annoying small talk. Although, that wasn't what ended the marriage. I trusted him completely, and he cheated on me. Even after I caught him, the weasel denied the whole thing. You know what he said after I told him I wanted to leave? Nothing. He just shrugged his shoulders and went back to his Sudoku puzzle.
So your married name was Kate Slate?
Kate winced. It seemed like a good idea at the time. How about you? Ever married? Dating anyone?
He glanced up. Why? Interested?
Not a chance. I've got enough complications to handle without dealing with men.
What kind of complications?
Kate pushed her hair back. Well, for starters, my parents have given me 4 months to turn our broken-down lake house into a B&B, or else they're going to turn it over to the jerk who bought the mortgage. I have a $10-per-hour job and $15,000 worth of repairs. I'm going to be a homeless dishwasher if I can't make this work. Matt admired an entrepreneurial spirit, especially when it was nourished by an impractical dream. Everybody had rolled their eyes when he announced he was going to build a brewery.
I know you've got the stuff, he said, and the lake is a great place for a bed and breakfast. Just put one foot in front of the other.
Easy for him to say.
Knock, knock,
a guy said from behind Kate. Matt looked over and gestured him in.
This is Jerry, he told Kate, but then you've already met.
In passing, she gave Jerry an apologetic smile. Jerry looked tired and overworked, though he was a good-looking guy. He was probably somewhere in his mid-30s and of medium height with dark brown hair and a goatee. But at the moment, even that goatee was slumping and his brown eyes looked worried.
She practically knocked me to the ground, Jerry said. It was sort of embarrassing.
For both of them. Kate didn't believe in flattening guys except when strictly necessary. And even though Jerry as a victim had been unavoidable in her quest to get to the big boss, she could still feel the Appleton curse of a neon blush rising. When she'd been little and playing Go Fish with her mom on the Nutshell's back porch, the blush had been the tip-off to a fast move on her part, and now it only grew brighter under Matt's steady gaze. He smiled at her.
Kate, why don't you wait for Jerry out in the tap room? He and I have a couple of things to cover.
Kate recognized a gift when handed one. She said her thank yous, saved her fence mending with Jerry for later, and beat a hasty retreat. So, Kate Appleton blushed. Matt liked that about her. There was something fascinating about being bold enough to run over a guy and yet a day later be contrite enough to blush.
She's presentable and all that, but kind of pushy, don't you think?
Jerry asked Matt as soon as Kate had cleared the room.
I think she's going to do great, and you're twice her size and her supervisor. If she can pull one over on you again, you deserve it.
Jerry looked a little brighter at that thought. Considering the matchup, Matt wasn't 100% sure he should look so happy.
So, Amber says you want Kate with Hobart this weekend. Yeah, Amber could use a break, but after that you can move Kate around as needed.
Jerry stroked his goatee.
Huh, any place.
Matt began recalculating the odds on that particular matchup. Kate might have Jerry in the gutsiness department, but Jerry was nothing if not a dogged and steady guy, and he could also be a little sneaky in a good-natured sort of way.
So, go to it,
Matt said. After Jerry took off, Matt looked at his weekend schedule and sighed. He had just enough time to head home, shower, and change before he had to drive an hour north to Traverse City for the weekend. He was getting tired of being on the road all the time, even if it did mean his business was growing in a tough economy. Much as he was proud to keep so many people employed year-round, he wanted his life back. He wanted some romance in his life, and maybe even love. He had a good feeling about Kate. She was going to help him find his saboteur, and maybe a lot more. Chapter 2. By the time Friday's lunch rush hit full swing, Kate knew too well what Hobart was. Instead of being paired with an unfortunately named coworker, she stood in front of Depot Brewing's noisy, sloppy, and steamy commercial dishwashing machine. Hobart had been named for its maker. It had a 4-foot-long stainless steel prep counter running at a right angle to its boxy entry and a staging area for clean racks of dishes at the exit. The machine was bulkier than her Jeep, more demanding, too. "Hot!" called one of the line cooks as he dropped a dirty skillet onto the end of the prep area. "Thanks," she replied from her side of the counter, but he had already hustled back to his station. Every inch of the white, tall-walled kitchen had been designed for food production, and the staff worked it to the max. Elbow to elbow, the three line cooks held their territories in front of the stove, grill, and fryer. Servers darted in to pick up orders. The barback hauled glassware, and pretty much everyone brought Kate more work. Her job was to clear the food debris and paper trash from the gray plastic bus tubs delivered to her. Then she had to rack all the dirty ware, send it into Hobart, and circulate the clean stuff back out for use.
"You've never done this before, have you?" a male voice asked.
She glanced up from her duties to see Steve, one of the servers, watching her. Tall and slender, with a dark tan and blonde highlights in his hair, he looked like a surfer dude. "Nope," she said.
"Definite bummer, but you're going to have to speed up. We're almost 86 on forks."
86?
"Out of."
"Gotcha," Kate said, moving a silverware rack into the cleaning line. Jerry, who was currently MIA, had demonstrated the job to her well enough. In fact, it had seemed easy before crunch time came. But Jerry must have left something out of his instructions, because this just wasn't working out the way it should. In the battle of woman versus machine, the machine was kicking her butt. "Do you have any tips on how I can go faster?" she asked Steve. Steve's mouth widened into a goofy smile.
"Nothing much I can say right now."
Something was up. Something no one had shared with her. Not that she could do much about it, other than feed more dishes through Hobart. Without thinking, she used her arm to wipe sweat from her forehead, forgetting that hot sauce and ketchup were smeared on that particular arm.
"Careful there. You don't want it to end up in your eyes,"
Layla, the most senior of Deeper Brewing servers, said as she made room for another tub of dishes. The silver-haired woman pulled a clean napkin from her server's apron and handed it to Kate. Kate wiped her forehead.
"Thanks." "I've been in this business a lot of years," Layla said. "Worked most every place in town, too."
Kate nodded. She'd seen Layla's plump and smiling face in an old staff photo behind the bar at Bagger's, right next to Harley Bagger's vintage lighter collection. Layla adjusted her apron and patted Kate on the shoulder.
"Over the years, I've collected some nuggets of wisdom, and I'd like to share three with you."
Kate brightened, despite the fact she probably still looked like an accident victim.
"Really? What?" "First, don't go anywhere with empty hands. There's always something that needs tending."
"Okay."
"Second, comfortable shoes are a must."
Kate looked down at her food-speckled white leather sneakers.
"Got that covered. What's a third?"
Layla grinned.
"How about we let you stew on that until you get caught up?"
Yep, Kate smelled something, and it wasn't just the hot sauce she'd been wearing. The scent was that of a rookie dishwasher being roasted. But she could appreciate a little gamesmanship as much as the next girl, and when inspired, she could engage in some too. The clock on the wall opposite Kate inched its way to 3 p.m., 1 hour before her quitting time. The kitchen's rhythm had slowed from its earlier frantic beat to a busy yet congenial hum.
The line cooks cracked jokes and laughed with one another. The servers took brief breaks, chugging soft drinks and counting their tip money. And Kate finally caught up.
"Awesome job. I can see the counter," Steve said as he approached with a heavy load of dirty dishes.
"But not for long," Kate replied. "Where was this stuff hiding?"
"Hiding?" He set down the bus tub. "Dude, it wasn't hiding."
Just like Steve wasn't hiding another goofy grin. Now, at least, she knew what was up. "No biggie," she said. "I'm game. Bring it on." And he did. Two more tubs soon joined the first. "Is that the end of it?" she asked.
"Dunno. There might be more," Steve said before ambling off.
"How's it going?" Layla asked when she arrived with yet another stack of dishes a couple of minutes later. Kate gestured at the mess. "Could be better. I'm not sure I get the rhythm of this place." And that, my new friend, is where the third nugget of wisdom comes in. "Which is?" The older woman smiled as she added her contribution to the mess. "Ask Steve once you've caught up." Another dishwasher might have whimpered, but not Kate. She was made of sterner stuff. Craftier stuff, too. After feeding another couple racks into Hobart, she took a quick glance around the kitchen. The servers and the cooks were all out front, too wrapped up in their current conversations to be paying attention to her. She quickly stowed the three remaining unwashed tubs on the floor in the open area beneath Hobart's exit ramp. She'd barely had time to hide her grin, too, when Steve arrived with another load. He did a double take at the clean counter.
"Wow, did you really get through all those dishes, Tink?"
"Tink?"
"Short for Tinkerbell. You made that stuff disappear like magic."
Tink wasn't the sort of nickname she wanted to encourage, but she'd have to deal with that later. "Just doing my job," she said, knowing that his view of the dirty tubs was blocked. "And Layla said you'd share her third restaurant hint with me as soon as I was caught up. So how about it?"
"No can do," he said with a nod to the dishes he'd just delivered.
She'd been expecting this. Kate gave Steve her best smile. "You know, that's one awesome-looking orange and white VW van with all the old surf shop stickers out in the employee parking area. It's yours, right?"
"Down to her tires," he answered with obvious pride.
"I thought so."
"Betty's the real deal. I found her in a junkyard when I was 17, and..."
His brows drew together.
"Hey, why are we talking about her right now?" "Steve, order up," one of the line cooks called. "In a second," he answered without looking away from Kate. "Now, before it's cold," the cook bellowed.
"Betty looks like you keep her nice and neat," Kate said.
"I do."
"Then you'd probably be real sad if all these dirty dishes ended up in her, wouldn't you?" His tan seemed to fade.
"No way. You wouldn't."
If her mascara hadn't already been sweated off, she would have battered her eyelashes. "I might."
"Yo, Steve," the cook shouted. "Now!"
Steve briefly looked his way.
"Yeah, just hang on, would you?"
"Sounds like you're pretty busy," Kate said. "I, on the other hand, have plenty of time to go out to the parking lot and bring Betty a little gift. Or you can tell me Layla's third nugget of wisdom." The cook had started hissing something unintelligible in the secret language of angry fry cooks. Steve winced at the sound. "So, what's it going to be?" Kate asked. Steve hesitated for just a second, appraising Kate with a friendly stare.
"You're tougher than you look, Tink."
It was nice to hear. For so many years, Richard had told her that she wasn't tough. Her moving to Keene's Harbor and her nutty plan to turn a broken-down family vacation spot into a B&B was all about showing that she could survive, and more than that, succeed without anyone's help. She had something to prove to herself and the world before she was ever going to let a man back into her life. "Thanks, Steve," Kate said. Over at the grill, the cook seemed to be speaking in tongues. "You might want to hurry this along," Kate said. Just then, Jerry strolled into the kitchen from the taproom area. Unlike Kate, he looked well-rested and free of food stains.
"Sounds like you have an order up, Steve," he said.
Steve bolted for his food, glancing back over his shoulder at Kate and Jerry.
"Understatement."
Jerry toured the washing area, then gave Kate a crooked grin.
Looks like you have a couple of stragglers. Are they there for a reason?
Persuasion for Steve.
He laughed. So I've heard. I've been getting Hobart updates out in the tap room. Those dishes you've hidden have been doing double duty today.
What do you mean?
Yesterday you rushed by me. Today I kept you rushing.
He hitched a thumb at the bus tub still on the prep counter.
Servers are supposed to clear the trash before dumping everything else in the tub. I figured for today, that job should be shifted to you.
He paused, smiling.
See, Layla's final nugget of wisdom is do unto Jerry as you would have done unto you.
Kate laughed.
Golden all the way.
Now she got the rhythm of depot brewing, and she had a feeling she was going to fit right in, too. Early Saturday afternoon, Matt stood in the parking lot of his latest purchase, a decrepit Traverse City motel called the Tropicana Motor Inn. Next to him stood Ginger Monroe, his local office manager.
A flamingo mural. Are you sure about this place? Ginger asked, flipping her aviator sunglasses from the top of her bright red head down to her elegant nose as she surveyed the motel's front wall.
If I weren't, I wouldn't have bought it.
I can't believe I never noticed the painting before. Those birds are wrong in every possible way.
Matt didn't respond. So far as he was concerned, a glam-looking 25-year-old who had a burning love for 1950s fashion and B-movies shouldn't freak out over flamingos. Those quirky birds and she were kindred spirits.
Their beady eyes are following me, she said.
Then look away.
I can't. Trying to avoid looking at this place is like turning away from a train wreck. I don't know what you're thinking.
He grinned.
That's half the fun of working for me, isn't it? And I'm working on building a sister restaurant on the lake in Keene's Harbor. If you think this motel's going to be work, you should see that place.
Ginger laughed. All the same, how about if I just wait for you at the truck? And much as you might want to stand here all morning admiring your buddies, remember you have a meeting back at the office in 10 minutes.
Don't let Ginger hurt your feelings, he told the fading birds after she'd walked away.
In truth, the flamingos were his buddies. They amused him as much now as they had when he'd been a kid and his parents would bring the family here on vacation. With 5 kids to clothe and feed, and a business that had never exactly cranked out money, the relatively cosmopolitan atmosphere of even sleepy Traverse City and the Tropicana Motor Inn had been a treat. His mom said the mural made her feel as though they were in the Caribbean instead of on Grand Traverse Bay. Ginger was dead on about the train wreck part, though. The city had grown in popularity and wealth, but the Tropicana hadn't been so lucky. The former owners had moved to Florida 5 years ago, believing they could sell waterfront land to a developer in a heartbeat. Not so. The real estate market had gone south directly after them. Matt had kept an eye on the languishing property while he'd worked to find the cash to cut a deal. Earlier this year, he'd played with the numbers and figured out how to both retain the motel's character and make it work. Last week, he'd finally been approved for a resort liquor license. After renovations and the addition of a restaurant, this place would be a gold mine during tourist season, as would the property in Keene's Harbor he planned to renovate. Matt was all about envisioning. While he'd negotiated this deal, he'd imagined himself kicked back on the new restaurant's terrace, saluting his bird buddies with an ice-cold beer. Weird, though. Right now, as he pictured it, a small and curvy blonde named Kate had planted herself in the middle of the vision. He'd had a lot of daydreams about the brewery over the years, but they'd always been his daydreams, just him and the brewery. He kind of liked having Kate there. After checking his watch, Matt headed back toward the truck. The last thing he wanted was to be late for a meeting with Travis Holby. Like Ginger and the Tropicana Flamingos, Travis was an original, a sometimes cranky original. He was also a prodigy of a master beer brewer and key to restoring this motel. For that, Matt would deal with the guy's quirks. 9 minutes later, Matt pulled up to the office building housing his third-floor walk-up office space on Traverse City's Front Street. It was small, but had a great view over Grand Traverse Bay, the long natural harbor separating Lake Michigan from the town. The largest city in the area,
Traverse City was a grown-up version of Keene's Harbor, with a sleepy population of 15,000 in the off-season, swelling to the breaking point with tourists and summer people in July and August. Travis had made himself comfortable in Matt's office, taking up residence in the reception area from the seat behind Ginger's desk.
"You're late, Culhane."
Matt fought back a smile. You had to admire the kid's style.
"Last I checked, this was my office, so I'm not late. You're early."
Travis gave Matt a flat stare that usually came from the kind of man who had teardrops tattooed at the corner of his eye. And while 20-something Travis was missing that particular mark, he did have his share of tats and piercings, including a gauged ear that made Matt wince every time he looked at it. The younger man was both wiry and wary, like a cage fighter. Sometimes he had the combative attitude of one, too. Ginger entered the office on Matt's heels.
"He's not late, and I'm betting you got here early just to snoop around."
Travis did his best to look indignant.
"I'm not snooping."
Ginger cut her eyes first to Travis and then to Matt.
"I really should start locking the door."
"You did," Holby said. "I just didn't feel like waiting in the hallway."
Matt glanced back at the door. No visible signs of damage. The guy was good. Travis smiled proudly.
"Don't worry. I've been keeping myself amused."
And there was plenty of stuff filling the office for Travis to amuse himself. Matt had to admit that he'd been kind of annoyed when Ginger had stuck a television and a mini-fridge in the outer office. He'd kept his mouth shut, though. She worked here 40 hours a week, managing his books, taxes, and investments. He spent most of his time at the brewery, so if he made it up to TC 3 times a month, that was a lot. Travis picked up a bag of potato chips from Ginger's desk and popped one into his mouth.
"Those were in the drawer," Ginger said.
He popped another potato chip, daring her to complain.
"Jalapeno. Spicy, just like you."
Matt had no idea what was going on between Holby and his office manager, but this clearly was not the first time they'd met. Matt inclined his head toward the closed door to his private space.
"Do you want to head into my office? When I've got football on the TV and your amber ale chilling in that fridge? Hell no."
Matt looked over at Ginger.
"Why don't you head on home? I'll catch up with you on Monday."
"Okay."
She shot Travis another glare.
"Not a single crumb or you're a dead man."
"Sorry about that," Matt said after Ginger had left. "She's not usually so..."
"Locked and loaded," Travis said. "Don't worry about it. Actually, I'm surprised she didn't body slam me."
Matt dragged over one of the guest chairs so he was seated next to Travis.
"I take it you know her."
"Used to date her. She dumped me for cause."
Matt didn't especially want to know the cause. He was sure he'd either done it or had it done to him at one point or another.
"Thanks for coming into town and seeing me. No point having you drive all the way out to Horned Owl."
Which was part of Travis's problem. He'd sunk a ton of money into a brewery and taproom so far off the beaten path that visitors needed to drop a trail of breadcrumbs in order to find their way back to the highway. Matt stood, got 2 ambers from the fridge, and handed one to the younger man before sitting. Travis opened the top right desk drawer and pulled out a bottle opener.
"You've got this place scoped out, haven't you?"
Matt asked. The brewer opened his beer with a well-practiced motion.
"It's good to know what weapons a woman can use against you."
Matt's thoughts traveled the road south, back to Keene's Harbor and Kate Appleton. Weapons like wide hazel eyes and a mouth made to linger over? Oh yeah, that was good stuff to know. Travis waggled the opener in front of Matt's nose.
"You coming back from wherever you are?"
"Unfortunately, yes." He took the opener and dispatched his beer cap.
"I've learned there's no good way to start a conversation like this, so I'm just going to put it out there," Matt said. "Word is you're having cash flow problems."
Travis took a long pull on his beer.
"Bull, where'd you hear that?"
Matt shrugged.
"You know how it goes. There aren't that many of us in the business, relatively speaking, and we've all got bar gossip down. They were just a couple of passing comments, but enough that I wanted to talk to you."
Silent and clearly torn between anger and embarrassment, Travis turned his attention to the television. Matt did the same. After the Spartans completed a fourth down conversion that was a work of art, Travis asked,
"If I do have a cash crunch, why would you care?"
"A few reasons. First, I like your product. And you remind me of me 10 years ago. You've got all the enthusiasm of a home brewer and, unfortunately, all the business skills of one, too. But I think, given some time, you're going to kick ass."
"If I'm so hot, why didn't you hire me as a brewer when I came to you 4 years ago?"
"You and Bart working together?" he asked, referring to his brewmaster. "One or both of you would have been dead inside a month."
Bart was one of Matt's closest friends, and also the only guy out there who could consistently kick Matt's butt at poker. Bart's competitive streak didn't stop at cards, either. When it came to beer, he was as determined to remain top dog as Travis was to attain that status. Travis scratched the spider tattoo on the side of his neck.
"Suppose I was having money troubles. Just what is it you're proposing?"
"A loan and a leg up," Matt said. "There's a niche market I think you can fill, and I also think you can help me. You have both the skills and the edgy attitude for a project I'm working on."
Travis shook his head.
"So you think I'm good, but not good enough to make it big?"
"Not yet."
"You pulled it off."
"Yeah, but I also screwed up plenty along the way. Why not ride along on a little of what I've learned, like how you're killing yourself by changing up recipes so often? It's like you've got beer ADD.
"So what? I like creating."
"You probably also like keeping the lights on and heat running in your brew house, too."
"Yeah.
Winter is coming. Business might be so-so at best for you right now. But in another month, no one is going to follow that donkey trail out to your place.
What then?"
"I'll deal with that when I get there," Travis said.
"Wrong. Too late, then. You always have to have a plan."
"I can think on my feet. It's all good."
"You can also fall on your ass. Out of curiosity, how much do you need to get through the winter?"
Travis took a swig of his beer, clearly considering the matter.
$30,000?
Yeah, the guy had major cojones. "Okay, how much do you need if you don't spend February in Mexico or whatever you've factored in there?"
$12,000 to $15,000, assuming prices stay stable," he said. "I don't suppose Ginger has that much cash hidden in a secret compartment in her desk."
"No. But for the right terms, I can scrape it up."
"So, deal."
"Any money I lend you is going to come with an interest rate of 5 points above prime, and no complaining about the rate because it's more than fair. It's a gift. If you're at the point I was when starting out, your equipment is leveraged to the hilt and you have no other assets."
"Close," Travis admitted. "I've got my car and my house, both of which are mortgaged."
"Okay, then. For any outstanding loan, you pay me interest only for 24 months, with the balance due at the end of that time. I don't cut into your cash flow with principal payments, and in exchange, I get the exclusive right to feature your beers in a restaurant here in Traverse City. You can sell by bottle in markets, but I'm it otherwise."
Travis's pierced eyebrow met his unpierced one.
"Small point, but you don't have a restaurant here. Best I can tell, you've got nothing north of Keene's Harbor."
No shock that Travis wasn't aware of Matt's activities. Under the radar was generally his style. Exactly 4 people on the planet knew about his Tropicana buy and that he was already corporate angel to another struggling brew pub in this city's warehouse district. Bart, Ginger, his lawyer, and his accountant. And Matt trusted all of them not to spread news until he was ready to have it spread. What Matt did outside of Depot Brewing was his business and his way of stepping out from under the microscope that could be Keene's Harbor.
"I'll have a place for your beer by next Memorial Day," he said to Travis,
assuming spring actually arrived in April and he could get the footings dug. That was a dicey proposition near the tip of Michigan's mitten.
"What happens if I can't pay you back?"
"I'm not through with the conditions yet. You also have to agree to have Bart come up and do a 1 week consult with you on your recipes. They're original for sure, but rough yet."
Travis pushed out of his chair.
"No way am I consulting with that jerk."
Matt fought to hide his grin. His reaction would have been the same back when.
"Huh, and yet you wanted to work for him."
"I was desperate."
Matt didn't reply. Travis would do the math and see he was desperate now. To point that out would cut into the guy's spirit, and Matt liked that spirit, warped as it was. Travis stalked over to the television set blocking Matt's view. No problem. Travis could contemplate wherever he wanted. He drew down his beer and thought about taking the rest of the jalapeno chips, except, as he recalled, Ginger also usually had some locally made sourdough pretzels in her stash. He leaned over and reached into the appropriate drawer. Travis swung around and faced Matt when he was halfway through his second pretzel twist.
"For $15,000 up front, I can kiss up to Bart," Travis said.
"$12,000.
While Matt was fair, he wasn't into giving away money.
"And just so you know the final deal points, before you get dime one, you need a business plan. A real one on paper and with financial projections that I have approved. And if you default any principal payment, I get a controlling interest in Horndahl Brewery."
Travis went slack-jawed.
"So if $12,000 is all you end up lending me, you think that should entitle you to run my life?"
"If you can't pay me back, maybe you need someone to run your life for a while. And at least I'm giving you a fair shot at making it.
The last 4 years of my life were worth more than $12,000.
"I can't deny that," Matt said.
"But that's the price of a startup. Hell, I did the math on what I was earning per hour after my first year and almost crawled under my bed. It was depressing and unfair. But you have to look at it from my side now. If Horndahl fails, and I don't think it will, all that money buys me is some recipes, beer names, and label art."
"So why are you doing it?"
Travis still looked skeptical, and Matt didn't blame him. This was a big step.
"There's no scam here, and no motive other than to get your beer out there for people